This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station. This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Hello and welcome to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashran Johan. Bersatu has been on the news a lot lately, largely because there have been many MPs from Bersatu who are now pledging support for Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim and the Madani government. But this party isn't just bleeding MPs, but members at all levels. So what does this mean for the future of Bersatu? Joining me on the show to discuss this is Dr. Oh Ihsan, Principal Advisor at the Pacific Research Centre. Ihsan, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Wonderful to talk to all of you again.
Over the past few months, many Bersatu MPs have been jumping ship to support the government at the federal level, which is the UNC government. What are your overall thoughts on this?
Well, I think because Bersatu, essentially, it was an offshoot of UMNO. Therefore, it carries a lot of UMNO's political culture. And that sort of culture would always require the party to be in a ruling position, such that, for example, the various party leaders would have their various appointments, and they could then derive certain political benefits and to be further distributed to their various districts, to their various constituencies, and so on. So when Bersatu is no longer in such a ruling position, then many of these MPs would find it difficult to serve their constituents as well as their various, for example, their followers, their loyal followers, and so on. So they would have to do so. They will almost have to do so in order to retain the same level of political support, both within their constituencies as well as within their close circles of followers. So that's why I think that's what motivated them to do such a thing. Yeah.
So how much do you attribute this to, let's say, Bersatu not being in the position of, of power specifically? And also, let's say, there's currently the government isn't giving equal constituency allocation to all the MPs in parliament. And or do you think this is more of a problem with Bersatu's own internal weakness? Because if you look at past, you don't see much hopping around from the past side.
Well, you may recall before the Sheraton move in 2020, there were similarly waves after waves of UMNO defection of MPs into Bersatu, very ironically. Right. And now it's Bersatu in the opposition. You know, they have MPs. They could not leave the party in order not to trigger the anti-hopping law, but they declare their support for the government of the day. So, number one, it's indeed because they need some resources, and all this so-called equal allotment of appropriations for both government and opposition leaders, sometimes it's not enough, frankly speaking, because you need to take care of not only your constituency, but shall we say the welfare of your supporters, of your followers as well. So equal appropriation for both government and opposition is nice, but it's not adequate to address this. If you talk about Bersatu, as I said, it has a very similar political heritage as UMNO, and many joined the party. Perhaps they have some political ideals, or perhaps they have certain other motivations, pecuniary of motivations, motivations which are self-beneficiary. So it's difficult to keep your support base if you are not in a ruling position. Past is different. past has a very strong ideological or maybe religious core. And whether they're in the government or whether they're in the opposition, I think their supporters and their MPs keep true to that very strong political core. Yeah.
So one of the parties that Bersatu members seem to be hopping to is PKR. Bersatu former Supreme Council member Mohamed Faiz Naman said he believes more of the party's leaders and pioneer members at all levels will be joining PKR. Why do you think PKR appears to be the top choice for Bersatu?
Well, I think primarily because UMNO is not very welcoming of this Bersatu MPs, because many of them were formerly UMNO MPs. So they defected to Bersatu and now they perhaps would like to re-defect, well, without triggering the anti-hopping law, to UMNO. UMNO understandably is not too keen upon them, right? Who knows, maybe in some future period, they might hop again. So PKR seems to be the driving force behind this current ruling coalition, and the Prime Minister of the day is from PKR. So PKR is a very natural choice for a number of these Bersatu members here.
So recently, Bersatu amended their party constitution to basically disallow their MPs, lawmakers, Aduns from defecting in the future. Do you think this will prevent party members from leaving, or do you think the defections will continue even despite the anti-hopping law and the change in Bersatu's constitution?
What these Bersatu MPs have been doing, what I would call de facto defection, they actually defected in all actuality, but because they don't want to trigger the anti-hopping law and lose their seats, therefore they say, oh, I'm still a Bersatu member. Right. I think it's not only Bersatu. I think DAP, for example, and maybe even PKR, I can't remember whether PKR did it, they also passed similar amendments to their party charters or constitutions, saying, for example, any MPs who disobey the political directives of the Central Committee or who supported the other side of political divide and so on would automatically lose their party membership. Now, such provisions have not been challenged in court. And there is an exception in the anti-hopping law. If you are fired by your party, then you can keep your seat. So I think if these sort of provisions, whether it's from Bersatu or from DAP, if they are challenged in court, the MP's lawyers, they might argue that this, in effect, it's firing the MP in question. And therefore, it does not trigger the anti-hopping law. He or she would still get to keep his or her seat. So let's see how the court would rule in such a situation.
What's your analysis on this situation as far as Bersatu's strength? Do you think Bersatu is on the decline? Does this show cracks within the party, that the party is on a decline? Or is it just, more or less what all parties go through, or many parties go through when they are in opposition? There'll be some jumping around, but it doesn't affect the party's overall branding and strength, internal strength. How are you reading this?
Well, I'm reading a mixture of what you just said.
Right.
On the other hand, I'm very tempted to say, because now Bersatu is in the opposition, just like previously when PKR was in the opposition in the last, shall we say, 3 years, I mean, before Anwar became prime minister. You might remember after Sheraton moved, also a number of PKR members defected to Bersatu, right? Okay. And now some of them would like to, again, redefect back to PKR. So that's very normal among some of these MPs who would like to get more political resources for themselves. On the other hand, I think Bersatu would actually need to, for example, find some niche for itself, some political niche for itself, because if you talk about defending some sort of racial rights, then you have UMNO, right? If you talk about defending some sort of religious affinity or rights, then you have PAS. So what is your particular political niche? Why should a typical Malay in this country support Bersatu instead of PAS or UMNO? So that's what I think Bersatu will need to do some soul searching as well. Yeah.
Would you say that they are doing some kind of soul searching, albeit a very surface level type of quote-unquote soul searching with their whole, sort of going against their own coalition sort of stand on, let's say, concerts? We know that PAS is very adamant. They are firmly against concerts, whether it's Coldplay and so on and so forth. But recently, Bersatu came back to sort of shoot the current government and saying the current government did not do a good job in trying to secure Taylor Swift and things like that. And, you know, if they, you know, perhaps implying that if they were in power, that they would have secured Taylor Swift. You know, I mean, this is all culture wars kind of, you know, yeah. Ultimately, you know, very surface level kind of thing. But why do you think, how do you think that's going to play out within that? Do you think that's a way of sort of finding their niche, so to speak?
Yeah. Well, number one, I am very glad that there are still some Swifties, as they call themselves, among Bersatu leaders, so much so that they would like to secure Taylor Swift's coming to Malaysia to perform and so on. So that's nice. That's in tune with the mainstream of the international community and so on. On the other hand, as they are doing such soul searching, they are, I think, somewhat distracted by various rumors of teaming the, shall we say, internal power struggle within the party, let's say between the party president and its secretary general. And then there are several other prominent leaders who are laying in wait and so on. So they also need to, in a sense, put a rest to this sort of internal squabbles. And on the other hand, I think you also hit it on the head of the nail when you talk about the relationship between Bersatu and PAS. PAS, understandably, is a very religious, conservative party. And Bersatu would like to so-called carve out a space for itself. But as it does so, it risks, for example, PAS assisting Bersatu to canvass for votes in future elections. It is an open secret that in the past, let's say the sixth state elections and so on, Bersatu won many of his seats because, you know, PAS was very helpful to them in terms of canvassing the various votes for its coalition partner, namely Bersatu. So if PAS were to not do that in future, could Bersatu itself survive being sandwiched between UMNO on the one hand and PAS on the other? So that it also need to do, well, it's part of the soul searching. Yeah.
Which brings me to my next question. Does PAS need Bersatu more, or does Bersatu need PAS more? Who brings strength to Perikatan Nasional?
Undoubtedly, it's PAS because, as I said, they are the one who are out there in the field trying to canvass votes both for themselves as well as for their various coalition partners. Traditionally, you might argue that, PAS has its main strength in the northern and northeastern part of Peninsula Malaysia, and thereby they would need Bersatu to help them break into, let's say, the urban constituencies. But as we saw in the last six state elections, as well as in the national election previous to that, you see PAS themselves making tremendous inroads into the urban and suburban constituencies, such that they win, I think, a lot of seats in very urbanized states such as Penang and also Selangor. So increasingly, I would not say Bersatu is irrelevant, but I think they will certainly need more help from PAS than PAS of them. Yeah.
So what does the future of Bersatu look like, especially from a leadership position? Because recently, during their annual general meeting, Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin tried to step down as the chief of Bersatu, but later, I think it wasn't even 24 hours or 48 hours later, he reversed his decision. I think after having discussions and perhaps even facing some internal pressure to continue on as the chief of Bersatu. Is Bersatu having a sort of leadership crisis right now?
Well, this is typical political posturing, right? The president of the party said, oh, I don't want to continue. And then all the other junior leaders would have to say, oh, please stay, you can still serve, and so on. I think I saw that in UMNO before with Dr. Mahathir doing it at some point, and also even in MCA with Dr. Right. Ling Leong Sik doing it before. So it's not new. But indeed, I mean, you see some, shall we say, rather credible younger leaders in Bersatu, such as Faisal, I think, the former youth minister.
Yeah, who went up against Anwar Ibrahim during the election.
That's right.
Right.
And it was not a very successful dragon slayer. But in any case, leaders such as this, if they could be given more prominence, then perhaps you could indeed see Bersatu sort of carving out, as I said, a space, a political space for itself. Right now, it's either Muhyiddin or it's Hamza. I wouldn't say people are tired of them, just that they perhaps are less attractive politically to the kind of voters they would like to woo. Yeah.
So you mentioned Faisal Azumu, also known as Peja. Would you put the likes of Azmin Ali in this camp? Because at one point, people thought, when elections come, Azmin Ali is going to be completely destroyed at the polls. He lost at the federal, at GE15, but then at the state elections, he won. What does the future hold for the likes of Azmin Ali?
Well, in Malaysian politics, you could never say never again, right? But I think his political rehabilitation in terms of, let's say, national leadership ambition would have to wait a bit longer because of his prominent role during the Sheraton move. So I wouldn't say he could not totally be politically rehabilitated. We've seen many other examples, successful examples, just that perhaps you need a longer gestation period. Yeah.
On the show with me today is Dr. O.E. San, Principal Advisor at the Pacific Research Centre. We will continue our discussion after the break. Keep it here on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Darshan Johan, and on the show with me today is Dr. O.E. San, Principal Advisor at the Pacific Research Centre. Before the break, we were talking about Bersatu and its future. Now I'm going to be switching gears and asking E. San about Sabah politics. So, E. San, unlike Sarawak, which is now very politically stable and the popularity of GPS appears to be growing from strength to strength day by day, Sabah is a little bit different, a little bit more messy right now. It's a lot more fluid. Could you paint me a picture for the benefit of those who may not be aware of the main coalitions and parties that are at play right now in Sabah politics?
Well, roughly, you would have, for example, the so-called GRS, which is the ruling coalition of quite a number of parties, and headed by the chief minister, Dato Sri Hajiji Noor. And you have PH, which is Anwar's PKR and DAP and so on. And then on the other side of the political divide, you have Shafiq Abdal's what is his party again? Shafi Abdal's Warisan Party.
Right.
And as well as UMNO, surprisingly. UMNO in the federal level, it's together with GIS, but at the state, it is not. Well, same thing with Warisan. So these are the four main blocks in the state at the moment. And I think after the next state election, it is very likely that no single bloc would get a majority in the state assembly outright. And it is very likely that they will have to form some sort of coalition government yet again. Yeah.
So let's start with Warisan. After GE14, which is the 2018 elections, it seemed like, you know, Warisan was emerging as this new sort of force in Sabah politics. But now it seems like they are somewhat on a decline, facing a lot of internal political problems and so on and so forth. Could you talk to me a little bit about Warisan? What's going on within Warisan, and why does it appear to become, to be in a position that's much weaker compared to after the GE14?
Well, Warisan never outright obtained a majority in the state assembly. It won a lot of seats in 2018, but I think its main obstacles, it could not really, shall we say, comprehend the trust of the Kadazan Dusun Murut community or the KDR community, because its party president is Shafi Abdal, and many Sabahans of Kadazan and Dusun and Murut descent, they would paint him as representatives of those who are of Filipino descent, fairly or unfairly. I think it's quite unfair to say so, but that's a perception, and therefore they don't trust him, and therefore he could almost never win the majority in the state assembly without this Kadazan Dusun and Murut seat. And then at some point he made the decision to extend extend its wings over to West Malaysia. And you might remember Warisan put up some candidates in the Johor state elections, for example. And those were not very successful. I think the fact that they contested against DAP, that was perhaps a strategic mistake, because the Chinese and the Indians are still firmly with DAP. If Warisan has targeted, for example, PKR seats at that point in West Malaysia, perhaps they could see more success. But DAP is sacrosanct in the minds of most Chinese and many Indians here.
Right. Is that what would you credit that sort of strategic blunder, if you can call it that, of a failure of an experiment by Warisan as the reason why they're not working very closely with Pakatan Harapan anymore? Because at one point it did seem, again, this is beyond GE15, right? We're talking about after GE14, it seemed like Warisan and Pakatan Harapan were on the same side, but now that seems rather rocky as a relationship as well.
Yeah, I would imagine so. DAP did not take that very kindly, right? That Warisan contested against them in their home turfs in West Malaysia. So, I don't think PKR has a lot of problem with Warisan. It's mainly DAP who holds an understandable grudge against Warisan. And as DAP, it's also a very important component party of this ruling coalition. Therefore, they would not like Warisan to play a very prominent role, at least in the federal coalition. And in the state level, they did not want to work with Warisan anymore. Yeah.
So, now, switching gears to GRS, could GRS grow from strength to strength and emerge as sort of Sabah's version of GPS? Or is that still too early to tell? What is your read on GRS?
I think they would have to, first of all, sort of placate their internal squabbles, because, for example, just among those which are those parties within GRS, which are mostly Kadazan, Dusun, and Murut base, they would have to sort of apportion the various state assembly seats to contest, right? So that there would not be overlapping candidacies, and thereby they would have a bigger chance of winning. So if they could sort of reach a formula on this, that's already a big step forward. And the nature, the reality of Sabah politics is indeed it's very fragmented, because everybody would like to have their own party so that they could become party president, so that when their party, let's say, wins one or two or three seats, then they could get a cabinet seat, and such that the party president could be a cabinet minister, for example. Instead of if you and your two other supporting MPs, state assemblymen, you are just part of a larger party, then, you know, you might not get to be minister, for example. So everybody would like to have their own party. I would say everybody, most senior political leaders, they would like to have their own party with two or three MPs and maybe two other state assembly persons. Yeah.
Right. And how, you know, when we talk about many of the prominent leaders and parties, we talk mm-hmm. about Warisan, then GRS. Mm-hmm. Where does, you know, the Sabah UMNO sort of faction factor into this? What about the likes of Bung Mokhtar? And how is it, how is the Sabah UMNO, how do you connect them to UMNO at a larger level, right? Do you see a connection there? Or I mean, obviously it's the same party, but are they operating in a very different kind of setting and so on and so forth?
Well, they are operating on a very autonomous setting, shall we say.
Right.
You see, at any UMNO General Assembly, it used to be, it might still be the case, the Sabah delegation would be the biggest delegation, followed closely by, let's say, Johor and so on. So it is, it is a large enough delegation of party leaders and representatives, which you cannot ignore. But the fact that you cannot ignore them, you have to grant them more autonomy in how they run the party locally at the state level and so on, such that at the national level, these UMNO leaders would support whoever is the UMNO president and so on. So Sabah UMNO is a force to be reckoned with. But again, if you ask me whether they could win a majority of seats in Sabah outright, I do not think so.
Right. So it's about, mm-hmm. It is a tale of fragmented politics in Sabah. Sabah Deputy Chief Minister Shahelmi Yahya, mm-hmm. he may soon face a political crossroads that would force him to choose between recontesting his Tanjung Keramat mm-hmm. state seat and also remaining as a Putatan MP. Do you have any idea what exactly is going on here?
I think it has to do somewhat with the anti-hopping law, such that, because he would like to contest both seats, right? The parliamentary seats and as well as state seats.
Right.
But if he were to, he wants to keep his parliamentary seat, then, he could not leave UMNO, right? He has to remain an UMNO member. But UMNO would not give him the watika to run for the state assembly seats. So he is facing a quandary. UMNO's condition to him is you vacate your parliamentary seat, then we will continue to nominate you for a state assembly seat. So he has to make that decision.
Right. All right, Ihsan, it's been a fascinating conversation. Before we wrap this up, would you have some final thoughts on where Sabah goes from here? Especially since, you know, when we just, you know, every state, every region has their own history and whatnot. But when we look at Sarawak, it feels that right now they are really going from strength to strength. And it seems like at least politically, things are rather smooth and concrete for now. Where does Sabah go from here?
everything has a price to pay, either physically or politically. In Sarawak, of course, you do see very stable and smooth political running. The price to pay is, of course, then the Sarawak ruling coalition. It used to be BN, now it calls itself GPS, would rule almost, I wouldn't say forever, but for a long time without a change of ruling government. In Sabah, granted, it's very fragmented. It looks, shall we say, rather disunited and so on. But, it depends on how you define democracy.
Right.
If you define democracy as frequent exchanges of government, then you certainly have it in Sabah, because sometimes A and B versus C and D, but the next round, it might be A and D versus B and C. So, I think Sabah and Sarawak provide the kind of contrast in the political scenarios that we would like to see in Malaysia, whether we would like to see a stable, long-running government such as BN before, or we would like to see very frequent changes of government. Yeah.
Ihsan, on that note, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
That was Dr. O. Ihsan, Principal Advisor at the Pacific Research Centre. If you missed any part of this conversation, you can also check us out on podcasts. We are available on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Darshan Johan, and this has been Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.